You have until our provisions arrive, provisions which will help us break into your elegant home. If you don't deliver him by the aforementioned time, we'll release the beast on him and on you. We don't want to kill our own. Please just let us purge.
Why are you doing this to us?
Because you are home.
The second you get within 2 feet of me, I'm gonna snap your neck and crack your spine.
And I'll shoot you dead.
And his spine will be cracked.
And you'll be dead.
And his spine will be cracked.
He's bluffing. How do you know that?
Huh? He's FBI. He knows this stuff.
Yeah, Paul. I know that stuff.
Please just let us go. Look, you have everything ahead of you. You're still so young. Nothing's really happened yet. We could just say George's leg broke on the boat. Everyone will believe us, I promise you.
Please don't do this. Just... Why are you degrading yourself? It's as painful for me as it is for you.
You don't know anybody by the name of Iris?
I don't know nobody named Iris.
No? You got a gun?
Yeah, they
hit it. Suck on this.
I am death. Vengeance is mine.
Winter is coming.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I am fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. In the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Excellent. And Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I am fantastic.
That's good. Last time we recorded, we were all in Connecticut at Mystic.
Last weekend, we were all in Mystic, Connecticut for our fourth annual Dark Discussions meetup, which is where the five of us get an opportunity to hang out together since we're all in different states and we don't get to see each other all year. And we go to Mystic Pizza, and usually that's our Friday night kickoff, and then we see a movie together. Some of us go to the casinos that are nearby, then we eat a lot. I'm hoping that next year we can maybe build in something a little extra, like a visit to a local attraction, because there are some cool attractions there. And also, we all see a film together, and then we usually record a podcast where we're all in the same area. So it's really special. If anybody of our fans or any listeners want to come and check it out next year, details will be forthcoming, probably not until after the first of 2020.
Yeah, but probably we're actually into that year.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah.
But just listen and we will fill you in for details. It's a great place to visit. Mystic is a charming little town. There's lots to do nearby. And so there's more to be done there than just hang out. It's really kind of fun. So we hope that you will all think about that for next summer. And moving on.
Yeah, we had a pretty good crowd, so, you know.
We did, yeah. We had a big crowd this year.
You know, we had some guest hosts from the Dorkin Inn and stuff. And hopefully next year we'll have a bigger group.
I know specifically Gage Fultz, U.S. Navy man. He is actually going to join us next year for sure.
Oh, cool.
He's moving across the country back to New London area where he was only a few years ago, and he's being restationed over there, and he said he's 100% in. So,
and also, listeners, Kevin Lutz and Holly Masiak were going to join us this year, but had to back out for different reasons. Hopefully, they'll make it next year.
Yep. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Ryan Tutulo was supposed to join us, too, and then something came up that weekend where I think he was out of town, so he wasn't able to join us. And he's a podcaster too, right, Mike? He usually goes down to Skierzek here and such?
Yeah, he was down there. I mostly missed him.
Same here, yeah.
He was looking for people to hang out with and chat about things, but unfortunately, that was on Saturday. I was doing a lot of photo ops and running around like a chicken with my head cut off.
So. Indeed. indeed. Let's see. A couple other things here. We are Dark Discussions at www.darkdiscussions.com. What we are, for those who are new to the podcast, we review and critique a movie usually each week. So basically sci-fi, horror, fantasy, thriller, techno thriller, mystery, grindhouse, art house, midnight movie, cult film, or whatnot. We pretty much talk about it. A lot of our films are newer films, some direct to VOD, some from theaters. However, some films are classics or even hidden gems.
Yeah, and usually the more familiar names of those genres we are major episodes, like our 100, 200, 400, which is coming up. So essentially, those are big anniversaries or celebrations of our ongoing series.
Yeah, that's true. This year, we've thrown in a few extra older films, such as No Country for Old Men, where we discussed that film, among others. And so we're trying to mix it up a little bit as well, especially since this year has been fairly weak for horror films, both VOD and theaters, even though there is a lot of horror films.
Yeah, usually the VOD stream keeps coming when there's nothing in the theaters, but not so much this summer.
No, it's been very quiet. And strange. We got some big films coming out over August and September, but for the most part, yeah, it hasn't been exactly the most booming for the genre section of film.
Yeah, yeah. Usually there's a good percentage at theaters, but there's a hell of a lot on VOD. This year, most of the VOD stuff has been, I guess, what would the term be, Eric, forgettable, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been mixing it up a little bit. Yeah, one thing Chrissy and Mike were talking about as a possible idea is that once a month we do a theme episode. So, for example, each of us, all five of us, would choose one film from a specific genre, and we would do one per month. So rather than, like, a couple of years ago, we did Killer Fish Fest, and we just did five straight Killer Fish Fest films, which kind of was a drain, even though...
Yeah, five times fast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fish. What we have thought about is doing something like that again, but maybe doing it every month, one every month for five straight. I think, Eric, what else can people see on darkdiscussions.com?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff. On the front page on the right-hand side are links to Friends of the Podcast that have blogs and other podcasts and informational sites and things like that. At the top, you can find links to the audio section, which has every single episode of Dark Discussions as well as all the other podcasts on the network, including the spinoffs, for free. There's bound to be something there you like, so go check it out. There's also an article sections where there are articles that have been written by myself as well as others. Nothing's been published in that section for a while. One of us should write something. And there's also on the very front page and front and center is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to support your online artists like us if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this podcast, which has been high this year, right, Phil?
Oh, how do you mean?
You had to buy a new computer, didn't you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So if you'd like to help us offset costs like that, you can go to the Patreon account and donate. We certainly appreciate all of our Patreons. So for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. All these submissions are gathered up and drawn from randomly on a quarterly basis. And whoever gets their topic drawn has that topic. We do an episode on it, so it's pretty cool. For more information, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
There's also sometime in the future we will have a different kind of podcast exploring the other side of films, usually the things we don't usually cover.
Yeah, that's cinema a la carte, and we are going to debut that later in the month, and so forth. So I think based off of discussing that Patreon thing, Eric, I think tonight's topic may be related to that.
It is, absolutely. Tonight's pick was a Patreon pick. Who is it from, Phil?
This would be Michelle Barclay.
All right. Tonight we're going to be covering the film from 1986 starring Tawny Katane, Witchboard.
That board.
David, are you here? Can you hear me?
It began at a party. It was only a game.
David, will you return to the living one day? Bullshit. Careful, Jim, you're upsetting David. David, are you all right?
Yeah, he's all right. He's just a little dead, that's all.
Shut up, Jim!
What's he gonna do, haunt me?
Hello, Linda, this is Brandon. I just realized I left my Ouija there the other night. I'm having some friends over Sunday and they want to use it. Besides, I want to contact David and see if he's calmed down yet.
David, are you here? Are you still angry at Jim? David, where are you?
Man, don't tell me you brought that crap with Brandon and Edward.
Oh, please.
Poor David, you should know how to hold a grudge, don't you? David?
I want to bring a medium by your apartment as soon as possible to exorcise the spirit.
Okay, let's talk to some ghosts.
David, where are you?
You!
Did you cause that accident at the site? David, don't lie to me.
When someone uses a Ouija alone, like Linda, she's very susceptible to the spirits she contacts. And the wrong spirit will take advantage of this. Pretty soon, all she wants to do is use the board. And once that's done, he's able to possess her.
Linda has made contact.
Linda, unlock the door!
David is here. And he's playing for real. It isn't a game anymore. Witchboard. Don't play it alone.
That's right. Witchboard. Witchboard is a film that was directed by actually a pretty well known and liked cult director named Kevin Tenney. He wrote the screenplay as well. He's probably most famous for Night of the Demons, which a lot of people love. The film is basically stars Tawny Katane. She was a big star in the 80s.
And for about 30 seconds.
90s. Well, no, she did like one of those real people shows and a few other things. But yeah, pretty much. A few other folks. No one that I really know, though. Stephen Nichols, the blonde guy, he was a pretty big daytime soap opera actor as well. And then
he looks like a soap opera actor.
He sure does, yeah. And then the other lead is Todd Allen. So it's three folk. Film, like I said, was in 1986. Made pretty good money for its time. Was a major release, about 1,500 theaters, which was pretty good at that time, and its eventual gross was $7.4 million on a budget of under $2 million. Rotten Tomatoes only has 13 reviews for it at the moment, but it is positive. And most people look back at it with nostalgia that are generally fans of films from the 80s, and this one stuck out because it was not a slasher film when the 80s were filled with slashers. All right, so that's all I got. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So I guess we can start with you, Eric.
Oh, okay. I originally heard about this film when I was a 14-year-old boy. Because one of my friends said, dude, you got to check out this movie. You get to see Tawny Katane naked. So I was like, okay, that sounds cool. back then, I liked the movie, probably mainly because of that. And I've had fond feelings for it ever since then. Rewatching it for this podcast, it doesn't hold up so well. I mean, it's a cheesy 80s movie. I did not enjoy it while I was watching it, but it's so cheesy. The acting is not great, but it's still fun. So even though it's full of 80s cheese and bad effects and bad acting, I still can't say I didn't enjoy watching the movie. So I guess that means I can't say it's a bad movie. It's just not a good movie. So I guess I'll sum it up by saying I'm not going to say this is a good movie, but I like it.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, I remember seeing this on cable back in the late 80s, mid to late 80s. You know, it's a fun movie. It is very definitely an 80s film. You know, I was thinking about this a bit, and, you know, why, you know, were the 80s so, you know, such a really good time for horror films? And part of it is that they were often their times were fun films. This is a film with a lot of flaws, and I'm sure we're going to come around to pointing out one or two of them. But it's, and if you can't appreciate an older film, man, I hate saying that for a movie that came out while I was alive, but it may not be your cup of tea. But there's just a weird charm kind of to it, that it doesn't necessarily add up if you just look at the sum of the parts. You know, it's just you know, the acting is really not that great. Some of the effects are terrible, and yet it's still kind of cheesily enjoyable. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. I don't want to go into too much depth because I don't know how much there is to talk about this film, and I don't want to say everything before we get to the conversation.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I actually heard about the film pretty much the same way Eric did, which is a friend saying, oh my God, you got to see this film. You get to see Tawny Katane naked. And as Eric said, she was somewhat of note, especially during the 80s. I never got to see it because it was an R-rated film, and I wouldn't dare sneak it at my own house. And just for the embarrassment's sake, not for my parents being, you know, punish me or anything. And I never watched it over a friend's house either. So when I got back into horror back in 1996 because of Scream, I started deciding to watch the quote-unquote bucket list films of the 70s, 80s, and in some ways 60s. And this was one of them. So I had it on my list, but I never did watch it until it came out on Scream Factory's Deluxe Collector's Edition, which is, by the way, loaded. So if you're a fan of this film, it's a high recommend. And so I watched it a couple, like maybe 2 years ago for the first time, and then rewatched it this week. I can say that I can understand the charm for the film. It's a fun film, as Mike said. It's a fun, cheesy 80s film, and it's always the nostalgia too to see Tawny Katane, and also if it didn't have two F-bombs and a small amount of nudity, the film actually is probably a good entry film for younger folk.
It's pretty tame.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I was talking to Kevin Letts, and he said that he still probably wouldn't let his kids see it until they were in their teens. And I said that's fair because this, without the nudity and the two F bombs, it would be a PG-13 film.
Yeah, it should be PG-13.
Yeah. So he's correct in saying so. And he actually watched it two nights ago, and he said he thought it was a pretty solid film, and he would rewatch it again for a cheesy 80s horror film. So I liked it, and I bought the Blu-ray 2 years ago whenever it first came out, blindly, and it's a good disc, and the film is something that I could watch maybe, you know, once a year during the Halloween month of October. I would recommend it, and it's good fun. Chrissy?
Well, I remember the ads for this movie. I was 15 or 16 when this movie came out, and I do remember seeing the ads for it, and because my parents wouldn't let us see horror movies, with good reason at that time, I was like, oh no, this looks so terrifying. I would never be able to watch this. Okay, so Phil says we're doing Witchboard, and I'm like, oh, this will be interesting, since I actually remember thinking this was probably too terrifying for me to watch. What a total joke. I was just like, this was not scary at all. It totally reminded me of like a Scooby-Doo version of like a Knight Rider episode or something in the 80s. It was so bad, in a great way. This is the kind of movie that 16-year-old girls in the 1980s would have totally gone for, because it's basically a giant soap opera with a little bit of supernatural thriller thrown in. It's the whole damsel in distress being rescued by the two guys at war over her. That was really big in the 80s. I think that this movie is certainly not on the level of a classic like The Omen or The Exorcist as far as these types of possession movies go. The acting is absolutely terrible. Some of it is cardboard. The rest of it is really melodramatic. I think it definitely has problems, but, you know, they honestly are the types of small problems that a lot of stories and a lot of TV shows had in the 80s. I really think this film is a blast. It's got campy special effects. It is a true 1980s throwback film, down to the hairstyles and the chick running around in her Laura Ashley dresses. I liked it a lot. I had a lot of fun, and I would totally watch this again. And Phil said that there were commentaries on the Blu-ray.
Two full commentaries.
Two of them. I would be really interested.
With the people behind the film, including the director.
Yeah, I would really be interested in hearing those commentaries, just because this was totally fun. I would actually consider owning this for my collection. This is the type of film that if I found it on TV, I would just leave it on. It's just good, clean, silly fun. I had a great time. It was when the movie was over, though, what I thought to myself was, wow, that was a really pleasant experience. And I'm pretty sure that the filmmakers did not want people to think that their movie called Witchboard was pleasant. So, you know, that should tell you right there what it's all about.
All right, very good. Yeah, for the Scream Factory disc, two commentaries, one with the director, cinematographer, that type of thing, and then one with the actors. There's an hour brand new documentary with the director, with Tawny Kitaen and various other folks in the film and behind the camera. Then there's four mini half-hour ones that come back to when it was first released. And then,
I might pick that up just for the extra features.
Oh, I thought you actually had it, Eric.
No. I thought about it when it was released, but it never actually placed my order.
Yeah, it's really worth it if you like extras and, you know, documentary, you know, full-length
documentary. I'd just be interested to see what everybody involved with the movie has to say about it now.
Yeah, right. No, that's a fair point. Yeah, so it's completely loaded, for the case itself, they have the original artwork as well as the new Scream Factory artwork, so you can flip the the piece of paper if you want.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's and then it's a Blu-ray and DVD combo as well. So it's a good thing. And right now it's around $20 now. So it's versus, you know, when it first came out when it was like 27 or whatever. So just a heads up for folks who are interested in that. Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Oh, hey, wiki.
Oh, we forgot.
You did forget Abe? About Abe. Good
yeah.
job.
I
was waiting. I didn't forget about Abe.
Right here, sir.
All right. So,
did this film this film came out before you were born or after?
Way before I was, about 6 years before I was born.
Got it.
But, you know, that hasn't stopped me from seeing a lot of the films from the 1980s and stuff like that. But honestly, I missed this growing up. I've picked up a lot of weird films and stuff like that. Some I've bought and some I got from like video stores when you used to rent them and stuff like that. And this looked like this was the type of film you would find on the kind of shelves at a Video Thunder or a Blockbuster or something like that. It's 80s cheese. It's the equivalent of falling down a waterfall of cheddar. It's not a terrible film at all. No, don't get me wrong. I think it has a lot of fun to it. The acting is definitely over the top and just it's giggle worthy. The effects are pretty dated. They have not aged well, as opposed to something, you know, from other eras of it. Even some of the gore effects, what little there is, are passable, but they're certainly not to the par of some of the more notable films. This may have to do with the budget, but it's not exactly a bloody film either. One of those scene nudity, called Vince of Swearing. But, so yeah, it's definitely, if it wasn't for those last two things, it could be a good entryway for a nice little starter for horror. It's not scary. They definitely try to do some jump scares quite a few times, but they're not exactly effective. It's fun. It's a kind of film you can just kind of sit around and laugh and enjoy. It's overall just a kind of film that it's not going to be for everybody, but if you're just looking for a little good time and some 80s cheese, then I'd say give it a chance.
All right, very good. Mike, do you have this Scream Factory disc by chance?
Yeah, I picked it up. I ordered it as soon as the winner was pulled.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, and so that was Michelle Barkley who chose this film, and as a result, we hope she emails darkdiscussions@AOL.com to give her feedback, her nostalgia, and her take. Anybody else who wants to give their feedback on this film or any other film that you want to discuss, whether we have done an episode on them or not, is darkdiscussions@AOL.com. Now, Eric, do we have a wiki for this film?
Wiki. sorry, I'll tell you what I was laughing at in a second. Wiki. When his girlfriend becomes dangerously obsessed with a ghost she contacted using a Ouija board, Jim reluctantly joins forces with her ex, his own estranged childhood best friend, to identify and exorcise the evil spirit.
Yep, that's right.
Spoiler alert! Jesus.
Yeah, that is a pretty.
The reason I started laughing is because on the IMDb page they also list the taglines for the movie, and the tagline for this movie is "Pray for survival till dawn." What? That's got nothing to do with this movie.
It definitely does not.
Jeez.
You know, unless it's about her trying to screw both these guys at the same time, that tagline does not make any sense.
Lord,
that's false advertising because there is no like morning.
They make it sound like the
thing.
Evil Dead.
Yeah,
this is not the
Dead
Evil
by
Dead.
Dawn. Dead by Dawn.
Oh hell no!
Yeah.
It might be the Evil Dead in terms of acting, but it's not.
So anyway, all right. So that's the wiki. So I guess if anybody wants to talk about things not directly related to the film, I know Chrissy, you may have some information on the Ouija board. But before you go into that, I just wanted to let people know that originally they were trying to get the name Ouija for the film, but at that time Parker Brothers nixed it and wouldn't give them permission to use the name, since that's a copyrighted name and created or at least owned by them now, which is Parker Brothers now a subsidiary of someone else. So they had to go with Witchboard instead, which they thought would be fairly explanatory, which I think it was. Now, Chrissy, I assume you know history of the Ouija board, and I assume you also have probably used it before.
Yes. I do. I mean, the history of the Ouija board is actually pretty long and pretty complicated.
But it's not what they said in this movie.
It is definitely not what they said in this movie. The Ouija board as we know it, first I'll try to just summarize a little bit of what I know. Ads really started, or it started to become a thing really in the late 1890s. I want to say, or early 1890s, like 1891, 1892. And that's, and there was a Pittsburgh toy company or toy shop that put the first ads in the newspaper for it. It was
they did get name it Ouija, which was the French and German for yes and yes, and what they said in the movie. So,
well, what's interesting is that is the commonly held belief that is what it's named for. But there have been scholars who have actually done a little more research since then, and they now know that there's a couple of other places that name could have come from. There's a couple of other places that name could have come from. There was this whole thing about, there was a locket that somebody was wearing, and on the locket it had the name Ouida, which was, I don't know, some person who was famous or something. And so they're thinking that maybe because the person, this person Ouida was a famous author and a woman's rights activist, and the guy who is credited with kind of promoting the board and getting it going was...
Oh, he switched it to be yes, yes, right? When it could have been originally meaning something else.
Well, it was his sister-in-law or something who said, oh, you really should name it after this wonderful person or something. There was some story about that has come out in the last few years, and I apologize. I do not know all of the details on that. But I mean, when I'm done talking, I'm going to give the, I'll give a link for the best article I found that appeared in Smithsonian. And my God, is it a fantastic article about the full history of the Ouija board. So anybody who really wants to go read it in depth and hear all of the, read about all these new theories that are coming out and everything.
Can you post that in the Facebook group?
Yes, I totally can. It's awesome. Really fascinating and really well done. It is the most in-depth. I mean, I learned a bunch of stuff when I read this, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. So anyway, it went...
And I'm going out on a limb and saying you have officially done more research on the Ouija board than the people who wrote this film.
Yes, I probably have. I will give you that. But when it first came out, it was called The Wonderful Talking Board. And... the interesting thing is that our perception...
I'm a board!
Yes.
I'm just given how, you know, I'm sorry, with all the mystical, you know, trappings and spiritual stuff that is around the board, it's just sort of a weird name to maybe in 1990 it would make more sense.
Yeah. Well, what's very interesting, though, in terms of the Ouija is that it was, the talking board was sold to several companies over the years. Kennard had it. The Kennard Novelty Company, I think, were the first people to make it. Then it was sold to somewhere else. And then maybe there were a couple of other places it was resold. And then finally Parker Brothers got it. But Parker Brothers didn't actually get it until like the 60s. So people always sit around and go, oh, it's the original Parker Brothers Ouija board. Well, between the 1890s and the 1960s, there were actually a few different companies because they would buy the board from this company and then resell it and rebrand it, even though it was still called Ouija. So the other interesting thing about it, getting back to just talking about the history of this a little bit, is the perception of it has really changed. When it was first created in the late 1890s, there was a very big thing. The spiritualist movement was in, okay? And the Fox sisters were big, and we can talk to the dead and all of this other stuff. And then every few years after that, you would have times of trial, great trials in American history. For example, after World War I, the Ouija board really took off because there were all of these dead soldiers. People had lost loved ones. There was a resurgence of it in, like, you know, after World War II, there was a resurgence of it because people had lost loved ones. There was a resurgence of it in the 20s and 30s, the early jazz age, because of all of the crime going on and people were losing loved ones. So Ouija's popularity, people really took it seriously. It was not something to be feared. It was a means. Not only was it a parlor game, but it was a means of these people who were grieving to feel like their loved ones were still with them. The connection between Ouija boards and horror really didn't happen until The Exorcist. Once that suggestion was made, that it was the use of the Ouija board that could bring evil through, once then, all of the sudden, the board became a thing of the devil. Before that, it was not perceived as anything other than a bunch of tarot cards, like a way to communicate with the dead. And I found that to be very interesting. And there's a number of studies out on that. But like even in 1951, there was an episode of I Love Lucy in which Lucy and Ethel host a seance using the Ouija board. And it's like a joke. They make a joke out of it.
Is that one, the one where she talks to Tilly?
I think so. I actually haven't seen the episode in a lot of years. But, like I said, it really did not become attached to scary until The Exorcist. And that was, according to scholars, that was the turning point. That was when our culture, okay, the American culture, all of a sudden turned around and went, oh my God, Ouija boards are evil. That was when all the Christians jumped on the bandwagon and said it was evil. That was when all that stuff went down. Before that, it was really an acceptable parlor game. You know, you would have a seance at your house with cocktails and, oh, let's talk to my cousin who died in World War II. Like, it was just a common thing. So that is also kind of interesting that I wanted to share in some of the recent reading I've been doing. Now, as far as my own experience, there's also a theory out there that says that the Ouija board isn't actually crossing over and talking to spirits, that it is actually influenced by the human mind and by the person who's working with it. So this is a theory that kind of suggests that if you truly believe that you are going to get an answer from your dead mother, then your brain is going to create that scenario. And the board is just a tool for your own body and your own mind to kind of manifest what it really wants to believe.
When a doctor gives you a prescription for the medicine, you already start to feel better. You haven't taken it yet.
The placebo effect.
Yeah.
Yes, the placebo effect, kind of like that. And there have been studies done with that now where they have shown that the mind has many layers of information, and there's like the conscious, the unconscious, the subconscious, the preconscious, and the zombie mind, right? And that those are terms that have all been applied to this level. It says that we can maybe manipulate our world with our minds. And they've done some research into this. I do hope that was enough of a history. It was kind of wandering, but I just wanted to fill people in.
I think it was pretty solid because you know, I mean, especially when we were younger, they were popular. Everybody had them in their living room with Monopoly and Life and all those games. And yet, it was one of those games that no one knew how to use except adults who actually read the directions. So folks that are younger may not know about it except because of, you know, the reinvention of it with the Ouija movies that just came out. So,
well, yes, and you know, I have often said, and I know I've said it on this podcast, I think I've probably certainly said it in, like, episodes with The Conjuring or whatever, is that technically you can make a Ouija board out of anything. Like, if you really believe that you can talk to the dead, you can take the back of a freaking cereal box and use it to talk to the dead. Like, it's... I
can
tend to believe
that into a Ouija board.
You can make anything into a Ouija board. I yeah. Yes, you probably can. But my point is
right here. So
my point is just that, and Nathan has certainly done a lot of things. I personally believe that there is a spiritual connection with the board. I do believe that it can be a doorway to bring evil through, but I also believe that anything that you give that power to, you can do that with. You know, like if I wanted to sit here and call up the devil using my citronella candle, I probably could if I was strong enough to do that or if I really believed. So, but yes, to answer your question, I have used Ouija boards before. I used it once in college, and the experience I had was so terrifying that I have never touched another one since. Never.
Origin of evil.
Yeah, I did not. Kevin, yeah, and I have no explanation for what happened. I really don't, so I just avoid it.
Kevin Letts told me that he feels that they're dangerous. This movie goes off the rails a bit, but I remember someone who either got possessed or really messed up playing with one, is what he told me through an instant message yesterday. For myself, I mean, I don't believe any of it. So, and I used them hundreds of times as a kid without anybody being around, and obviously nothing happened. But again, I'm a skeptic of all
things.
Well,
except you got possessed by a teenage girl.
Teenage girl. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
had to say it.
He was possessed by Tony Kaitan.
Yeah, because of My fandom of Taylor Swift and such. But all in all, I know a lot of folks, such as both Christy and Kevin Letts, for example, believe them. So, and your husband too, Christy. So let's go around. Hey, what about yourself? Have you ever used one, and your thoughts on their reality?
I don't ever recall using one before. You know, I've seen plenty of times in stores and stuff, you know, different quality, some of the like, more basic kind of store shelves and some of the more fancy. I don't really believe in them, though. I do kind of think it is kind of can be influenced on terms of what get seeing what you want when you think about it enough, whether you actually want to contact the spirit or someone you know, or you just want to, you know, it's part of placebo effect, but it's also kind of just your mind can make it real. You know, sometimes you can kind of tell. I think the influence is going to depend on the person or the group of people and the intent of how they want to use it. Is it to actually contact the dead? Is it just to have fun? Sometimes you'll kind of, that kind of result is where I can see where you can quote unquote make contact. But it's very fascinating. It's very fascinating how this item has kind of lasted through all the years.
All right, very good. Mike, what about yourself?
Look, you know, I'm got a scientific background. I kind of think that something like this that's been around for a while, if it actually worked for spirits, it would hold up to more rigorous testing. That's the ideomotor response, of the subconscious effect of movement in your arm, and your hands or your arms or whatever to get what you know, not what you want, but the subconscious influence. I think makes a lot more sense to me. I you know, I've played with Ouija boards. If I would have done it, I've probably done it at most 3 times. You know, but it's just not my thing. So, but I'm, you know, obviously aware of them. I've always been kind of skeptical of them. But I think they work really well cinematically because you have that whole, you know, the build-up tension of what are they spelling and trying to guess what is it they're spelling, you know, and it's by Ovaltine, you know, whatever it is that they're going circling around.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I fall. But, you know, I don't disparage anyone who does.
Very good. Yeah, I always get bored with them. After, like, 20 seconds and nothing happens, I go, well, where's the Atari so I can go play video games or something? Or where's the basketball? I'll go outside or something. But I tried. And then when I did it with adults, I just thought it was boring. Eric?
I've never used one. Personally, I think it's probably a bunch of hooey. In order to be convinced otherwise, I would have to have one not only do something, but answer a question that only I and the spirit in question would know the answer to. I think that's really the only way I could be convinced one was actually doing what it claims.
But even then, if it's your own subconscious guiding the board, then if you know the answer...
That's your supposition.
Well, I would say that's not my supposition. It's what some research has suggested. Well, I mean, I would want something where you
some researchers say vaccine causes autism. That's
yeah, and that one's been debunked. no, you. I'm thinking you would need something because if it is someone touching the board that's influencing the answers, then it has to be an answer that no one touching the board knows the answer to.
I'm just not discounting the
like,
existence.
Where is Jimmy Hoffa's body?
Okay,
you
that's
know?
Okay. I didn't want to finish my answer.
That's it.
All right, calm down, everyone. I think we're all getting possessed by evil spirits here or something.
Not just Mike.
As we saw, Hereditary even used it last year in that movie. So they're in all sorts of films. And I guess we can start talking about this film here. at least to set it up, basically there's a house party, and I kind of like how they set it up because they just throw you right into the house party, you know, without introducing who the leads are. So you see all these people, and there's a few people talking, and you don't know who's the leads, except obviously Tawny Katane, because they promoted her big for the film. There's a guy there named Brandon. It's kind of a waspy.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Well, he's an asshole to one guy.
Here he goes.
If you really take away that one guy, he's an asshole to. He's fairly nice. I felt.
Yes. No, he's a complete douche.
Most people will probably get that, but I didn't think. I felt that the animosity may have come out too much when it was really just directed at one person and vice versa.
I think they kind of do a bit to redeem his character towards the end.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely trying to set up this kind of bitter relationship between the two male leads.
It's
trying to establish it, but you know, you don't know at first. It just feels like he's just, as Eric says, just a douchebag, but we find out it's more directed towards one sole person rather than everybody around them. Because with other characters, he's actually quite, even with the kooky psychic he brings at one point, he's quite civil to.
Right, yeah.
I will say that there's a line in this party scene that I can start trying to work into real life, which is that the guy that the douche is being mean to goes into the kitchen with his goofy friends. And he's in the kitchen talking to his goofy friends, and then his girlfriend walks in and wants to talk to him. And so one of his goofy friends says to the other goofy friends, "Yeah, we're gonna go rinse some stuff."
Yeah,
and they just walk out of the room.
Yeah, so that was pretty
whenever great. I want to leave somewhere from now on, that's the line I'm gonna use for my exit. Yeah, some stuff.
You remember American Psycho? That it was. I have to go return some videotapes. Every time
it was so random, it just cracked me up.
I gotta go rinse some stuff.
There were, you know, we talk about the setup between the two boyfriends and how, you know, they clearly are sparring with each other. But I need to say that it was kind of weird because when the movie opens, it's this party, and we see the ex-boyfriend, Brandon. That's her ex-boyfriend.
And well, I don't think that's a true statement.
Well, no, her current boyfriend, Jim, is sitting there, right?
And yeah, Brandon, but I don't think she was ever actually hooked up with that dude. He just wanted that to be the case.
I don't know, dude. He's touching her completely inappropriately. Like, he's rubbing her shoulder.
Well, that's because he's a douche. He's
snuggled up against her on the couch. And the other guy, her current boyfriend, Jim, is just watching it like, oh, well,
that's
okay.
A pussy.
And that's why I was like, that's kind of weird, because I'm pretty sure that if I was at a party and my ex-boyfriend was all over me like that in front of my husband would knock his block off. Like,
well,
what the hell?
What I think it was the Brandon guy obviously wanted to, in the past, date Tawny Kitaen's character, named Linda. But I don't think he ever was 100% successful.
Right.
He was one of those guys that hung out with her a lot, but he never was actually...
No, that's not true.
No, that's absolutely true. It's explicitly stated in the movie, Christy.
Really? No, what I heard in the movie was she was already broken up with you by the time I came back.
No.
I heard.
Jim said he didn't know.
Right.
He was off in med school.
Oh. What? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch this again now.
Yeah, what happened was that Jim, the boyfriend, was at med school, and then Brandon was hanging out with Tawny, Linda's character. And it never explicitly said whether or not they were boyfriend girlfriend or not.
No,
I thought the deal was that Brandon just wanted to hook up with her and never got the chance. And because
I'm pretty sure they were together at some point.
He got mad.
They were together. Right. No, they were together. I'm pretty sure they were because because it even says in the wiki it's her boyfriend and her ex.
Never lie.
Yeah, but still.
If it's in the wiki, it must be true.
No, but it is in the movie. He does say, I'm sorry, there's when they're in the hotel,
yeah,
and
he
he's
does
doing
say
that ridiculous, I just don't want to die alone. Okay, whatever. I'm pretty sure guys don't sit there.
Right, and then he makes
that.
The joke about how when you were dating her, she didn't like
she
you.
She laughed in the bedroom.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
only place you made it. He goes, well, I made her laugh too. And then Jim says, oh yeah, you always made her laugh in the bedroom.
I remember that one.
Yeah, so they were definitely hooked up. Like they were, but it's just weird because the opening scene of this movie, I didn't even think, I thought that her boyfriend was the blonde guy, Brandon, because he was hanging all over him and she was hanging all over her. And then I find out that the boyfriend was just watching this and not doing anything. And I'm like, all right, this is just, I don't get this.
It's almost as if this is a poorly written movie.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, it was simply the fact that he thought it was hilarious, meaning Jim, because it and also he was the one that's going to lives there and was going to be sleeping with her later that night anyway. So, I know that she kind of liked Brandon, and I didn't think he wants to piss her off or something. I don't know.
It's a lot of melodrama. You know, outside of the main plot, there's a huge slew of melodrama between the main characters.
Yeah, the soap opera, as you said, Chrissy.
Oh, it totally is. It's a total soap opera. Like, and that's fine. You know, I mean, I think it definitely, like I said, I think it definitely would appeal to chicks. You know, like the teenagers, the teenage girls in the 80s. Because I love that whole business, too, about, like, when the two guys are sitting in the hotel room and it's, like, true confessions. And I'm sitting here watching these two guys do this, and I'm like, dude,
bad.
Real men don't do this, I'm pretty sure. Like, I mean, they're literally talking like, but I don't want to die alone.
It's like, oh my God. It's like they're on a stage. It's like they're on a stage during, some final scene or something.
There was an inordinate amount of melodramatic yelling in this movie.
Oh, God.
Yes!
Shouting.
over stupid shit. It wasn't even in the right place. Like, it was like, oh, I'm going to get upset now because
the tires of my car are flat.
Yeah. But I mean,
stop sneaking up on me. I've told you.
Yes, that's
what's that.
That's like done like five.
First of all, she scares way too easily.
Oh, yeah.
But he was in the mirror. She wasn't expecting him to be there.
If I sneak up on you,
I jump like a bastard too. So
But you turn. Do you turn around and say, "Goddamn shitfuck asshole, son of a bitch, motherfucker, how dare you?"
Well, that's a misnomer. The reason she uses the profanities is because that's part of the possession, as Brandon says later.
Really stupid.
I'm sorry.
It still looked really stupid.
Well, and also, I thought was funny, because maybe I missed it, but she, like, has that one moment where she curses, he comments on how she's cursing, and I don't think she curses for, like, the next 30 minutes, and then, has she been cursing a lot? Like a trucker.
Yeah.
No? No, she hadn't been. It was just, like, the one scene where she'd been cursing. She hadn't been, like, fucking balls and cutting shit, through the whole rest of the film, it's just...
But the melodramatic, like I said, too, the tires were hilarious, that you could at least see somebody yelling. There was, like, yelling and crying going on about stuff, like, there's this one scene where... Must you go to the, to the hometown? I have to!
Yeah.
I am responsible. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah,
laughing my ass off. Okay. It's hilarious.
Right, well, what happens is basically he brings out a Ouija board, this Brandon guy, and he says the board has a link to a boy that's 10 years old that has passed. And they ask, how does he know that? And he says, because I've talked to him. And then they say, why is that? And he says he doesn't know. Just sometimes... spirits get attached to certain things.
Okay. 10-year-old boys.
But what happens is that Jim and a few other folks at the party obviously don't believe it, and the board kind of flies out of their hands, and at that moment, the tire for his car, meaning Brandon's car, pops. And though maybe the acting may have been a bit off here or there, I could see his anger if he actually believes that's related to the ghost. So if he's a true believer and they fucked up everything in his eyes, and then it's the tire gets popped the moment that everything is fucked up, he gets pissed because he's like, oh my God, I'm the one that... I'm the Ouija board, the person that's running the board, and even says that, and therefore I'm responsible for the F up, even if other people were being the dinks.
And I'm a ghost, now I'm a believer, not a trace of doubt in my mind.
So since this is a
Thank you, Abe. My evening is complete now.
Since this is a Patreon, we should try to stay on track a little bit for those people who...
Let's see. We have... So basically, yes. He tries to communicate with the ghost, explain the rules of it, saying that two people have to work on it together. Two people who are pure in the sense that they are not tainted by any outside influences or substances.
Okay, just to interject here one second, that is also Ouija board BS that they... Up, yes.
Yes. I know. It's just what they're establishing for the film, trying to at least they're setting their own rules in order for the story to work. And essentially, Jim, who doesn't believe in this stuff, just kind of mouths off through the entire thing and upsets the spirit, David, and which leads to the aforementioned punctured tire.
Let me ask something at this point. Theoretically, if Ouija boards work the way they're supposed to work, would the spirit be able to hear anybody who wasn't on the planchette?
Yeah, because aren't they in the room?
I'm asking. I don't know.
Yeah, I would. That's a good question. I
thought it would be the ones within the circle or who those in the midst of the whole process, not just people standing on the outside.
Because if it's just in the room, then why do you got to touch the planchette?
Well, this is what they explain, and I guess this is generally Ouija's anyway, is that you have to touch the planchette, obviously. In this movie, they say it's even better if the board is on people's knees or something, for the fact that the more that touches the board and planchette, the more successful, because the spirit channels through the people.
Right, that's my point here. So if that is the case, then would it have even heard David spouting off?
It's a good question. You mean Jim? Oh, and David was what the one of the.
No, no, sorry. You're right. It's Jim.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I mean, I'm not familiar with how seances or Ouija boards are supposed to be. You know,
because like later on when they bring the psychic in, they have to stay within the rule of not breaking the circle, or otherwise break the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets kind of confusing because, you know, the rules feel like they only work for certain points of the story in order for things play out.
There was definitely a lack of consistency. And the other thing I did want to mention, as long as we're talking about this opening here, Brandon's character, who is the ex, supposedly her ex-boyfriend, I really kind of wanted a little bit more setup with him, expressly showing that he was, why he was kind of into this stuff. Now, I'm not talking about a whole lot of backstory, you don't need it. Just some kind of line like, Brandon loves to, you know, Brandon got this thing at a curiosity shop, and so he's become really into it. Just something. Because it just seemed kind of weird that all of these people were at this party. They all seemed pretty intimate with each other. And yet, when he brings out this Ouija board, everybody's like, ooh, what is it? That's so surprising. It was just weird. Yeah, there was something that was off there.
Let's be fair. All of these characters, well, maybe not not the lead male. All we really could have used development. I mean, the Tony Kaitan character is basically
a damsel in distress.
She's a girl, and therefore she likes boys, and she might be pregnant. I mean, that's basically all we know about her character.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean,
By the way, she's pregnant, even though she knows she's pregnant. Even though, oh god, I was wondering, did I miss something? Because she gets the phone call saying, it's the doctor, I got your results, I want to talk, and then she hangs up, and I'm pregnant. And it's like, wait, what?
And she never actually calls him back.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, there were...
But then it becomes a plot point later, so...
Yeah.
Well, but there were a few things in this story that really didn't work, and they were all little things like that, but that was one of the things that I said when I was giving my overall opinion of the movie. This sort of little slip-up type stuff was extremely common in 1980s TV. This felt like a television episode script to me, in that it was, you know, a lot of people jumping to sudden conclusions like that. They noted they couldn't find David's parents, for example. But then they find David's parents' headstone.
David's the boy, yeah, right.
The boy, right?
That died,
and he died, right. But... look, they died on the same day a couple of weeks ago. Wait. My point is, they had been looking in a phone book at a phone booth and said, I can't find the parents' address anywhere. Well, if the parents had just died 2 weeks ago, all of us here on this podcast, except for Abe because he's a baby, remember that the fucking phone books
Not came if it's out unlisted. Not if it's unlisted.
Right, but that's not the point they were trying to make. They were trying to say, like, ooh, they had suddenly vanished now that they were unlisted. And that doesn't work when you're talking about the fact that the new editions of the phone book came out every year. So it's not like they died and they disappeared from the phone book two weeks later.
Unless it was unlisted, though. If you were unlisted, you weren't in the phone book.
But, Phil, I understand that.
That wasn't the point they were making.
Is, that was not the point they were making. They okay. That was the point they were making was, whoa, they just died 2 weeks ago. Ooh, that.
Which is why we couldn't find them in the phone book.
In the phone book, yeah, that's exactly my point. That was what I was saying. So it was little stuff like that. But then again, for me, that's sort of quaint and charming because that's 80s TV. That's what they did. They were just like, oh, it doesn't. We don't care if it doesn't make sense. Just
well, just, you know, the whole thing of the parents kind of really doesn't go anywhere. You know, you keep thinking there's going to be some big reveal of the parents or something like that, and it's just kind of dropped as well. And you know, speaking of
the whole David story plot, though, Abe, and all the stuff around it. Was a red herring.
Red herring.
It was. Yeah, I know that. I'm just saying. It also because you know, there's so much of it uses red herring. When we get to the actual antagonist, there's not a whole lot to the character. But as I said, it's just that simple. It just kind of melds in with a soap opera melodrama. Even the villain is overly cheesy as well.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things. First off, they rent a room in this old mansion, Jim and Linda. So it's like this really wealthy mansion that was converted to apartments, basically. So the in the building is you know like from the Victorian era,
except for the exceedingly large fire axe on the wall.
Yes.
That will not in any way, shape, or form come into play later in the film.
Well, if you are now in an apartment building, you know, certain things like that, whether it's fire axes or fire extinguishers and things like that, it would make sense even if the building is a
okey dokey.
We have one of those mansions in my town that was converted into condos too and stuff. So.
Well, and my other thing about that house, though, was that I don't know about you guys, and I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but the reveal of the evil person's house being the same house they live in was kind of like a little bit like...
Dun, dun, down the nose. Dun!
Oh, it happens to be the exact same house I'm living in. Okay.
Well, you know, again, though, a lot of this, though, is explained pretty good.
Because, oh, yeah, I mean, no, I agree. Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously, if you bring a Ouija board in a house that was owned by a serial killer in a scary movie, there's a chance that Ouija board is going to be possessed by some evil from that house. I mean, we've seen that in Salem's Lot and things like that, where there's houses that have evil or whatever. So that kind of makes sense, but I would agree with one thing, Chrissy, is that I would think the house would have some notoriety, meaning people would say, oh, hey, is this that house that I heard like 120 years ago there was a mass murders? And, you know, so you would think that there would be some notoriety about the house. Well, it was obviously a complete surprise for our lead characters that happened to be a house that had some bad history.
Now, this is where I also come. We get into the whole Jim as the portal thing. I kind of try to figure out how the hell he was portal if he didn't use the Ouija board. Was it just him being there, or was it something about him?
It was something about him, obviously. And that's the thing, is that you remember, they explain all this, too, where they say that the Ouija board is just really the gateway, and then these spirits can really be linked to anything. A Ouija board just happens to be a convenient item for, you know people.
Oh, yeah, I got that part. I was trying to figure out, because the fact it was Linda and David using it only... And Jim never touched it, so at the end, the spirit makes this whole big deal of him being the portal of it, the whole thing.
Right, yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah.
That actually felt a little bit thrown into me at the end, and I was having trouble understanding that. Did you guys understand that?
What are we talking about now?
At the end, when he was like, oh, Jim is actually the portal, I was completely confused by that.
To be inconsistent movie rules. Because it didn't make sense to me either.
Right. Well, let's talk about the backstory. As Mike mentioned, you know, for the three characters, really the only Jim was the one that had a pretty well-defined backstory, and that was basically he came from a family that was probably fairly wealthy, but the parents were drunks or abusers of something, and he had a crappy life, so he used to hang out at Brandon's house more than his own house, because Brandon came from another decent, wealthy family, but obviously from good family, good folk. And then eventually, Jim was since he had at least a good family life with his friend's family, he was able to stay on the right track. And was obviously a smart kid, and actually went to college to be a medical doctor, but decided to drop out not because of flunking out, but simply because he just was kind of,
Like empathy or something.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, there's this thing about him not really actually caring about anybody. Or
what it was is that because of how crappy his life was at his real home, he never wanted to show empathy and was very put offish to people. So when he was a prick earlier in the film, we can gather that it was related to, even though it was really just to Brandon, we can gather that it was a protection device. And so when he went to medical school and he felt that he had to work with patients and whatnot and show empathy to them, it was out of his norm. And so he didn't feel like he could do that. And so he dropped out quit medical school.
Yeah, there's also a running thing going on between Linda and Jim where Linda will always tell Jim she loved him, but Jim would never return those words. And that's something they kind of built up to where what Brandon criticizes about Jim not really actually loving Linda, or no, loving her enough.
Yeah, that's an excellent point too. So Jim's character is, I guess, a damaged person in the sense that he's very timid, showing true affection and love, even if he feels it. Outwards to people, and as a result, he kind of seems, I guess, you know, like shy people seem like they're jerks, but they're just shy. Jim seems like he's a jerk because he's kind of standoffish, but again, it's not because that's truly him as a person.
And it's not just feeling any affection, but it's also showing grief. Which is another thing that is kind of built up to towards the end of near the end of the film as well, when Brandon is killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think when Brandon passes away, it's almost like a changing point. One of those three beats, Chrissy, probably where there's some sort of beats and or whatever that the crisis change thing, that was the moment, I think, where
yes.
he...
Yep. Yeah, but, you're right.
You know, because he's devastated that is... I mean, at that point, they were kind of making amends because they had a goal to save his girlfriend and from you know, the possession of what they thought was David, who was doing the possession. And then a couple of other things too, which is he was on board in believing the Ouija board and supernatural was real. So one positive thing I could say about this film is the showing of non-believer becoming a believer was fairly real, I felt, at least.
I would definitely agree with that, and I also did want to throw in here that I think the scene that I enjoyed, like really enjoyed the most, and at no point in this movie was I bored. I really do need to say that I was really enjoying this. I loved that Ouija board scene by the lake.
That was pretty cool. Yeah,
that was really good. Like, the tension was good. It was a smart choice for the filmmakers to do a lengthy scene like that, because it was as though you, the viewer, were in the room watching someone, like, do a real Ouija session. Like, it had almost that voyeuristic quality to it. And I think that's why, as far as I'm concerned, that was like the outstanding scene in the movie that held up over time, that would hold up over time, that just had appeal, that was interesting. And like, I actually, for the first time in the entire movie, was on the edge of my seat wondering what the Ouija board was going to spell. And that I just really, really liked that sequence. In fact, I watched it a couple of times. As far as talking about the fact that Jim is very cold, and I do agree with you, Phil, that was totally a character conflict crisis change arc. I didn't think it was strong enough, but maybe it was just all the melodramatic yelling, like Brandon yelling about, why did you tell her why you really dropped out of med school? And it made it sound like it was something horrible. Just don't like people.
It's like the story has a structure plan for the most part, but the way it's delivered in certain number of areas really weakens the impact.
Well, we've been forgetting to mention one entire aspect of this movie, which is after the initial seance, Jim works construction, and on the work site the next day, the silly friend that had to go rinse some stuff is on the site with him, and there's an accident on the site that we're led to believe is caused by a spirit, and was aimed at Jim, actually kills his friend instead. And so through the whole movie, there's this homicide detective following him around, convinced that he murdered his buddy at the work site.
And as homicide detectives are wont to do, he makes sure that he knows he's a suspect the entire time, even though he has no evidence.
Yeah.
And he sits out by the curb in his car, eating an apple intensely.
I did like the death of the friend at the construction site, because...
Oh, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, because they were making you think that the axe was going to fall, right? And instead, it was sheetrock that fell. And then this is where the cop gets involved, because he is curious about the hammer / hatchet, because it's rather than a hammer with the fork in the back with the pulled nails, it's a hatchet instead. Both the friend and Jim had such hammers, but Jim's hammer has disappeared.
Right, it got ganked by the spirit.
Which led me to realize that there's this ghost who's just dragging this hammer hatchet around for the next like 3 weeks. You know, just waiting for his next opportunity to use it.
How does that work, though? Does the spirit, does it, like, actually have to physically move the hammer? Does it, like...
Yeah, float around.
Bring it into the spiritual plane and then bring it back later?
That's what I'm thinking, Eric.
Does he have ghost pockets?
I'm thinking it's the spiritual plane thing, because, again,
people would notice a hatchet floating around.
Yeah, you would notice a hatchet floating around. Just
wasn't
as you would
a
notice...
a spirit that was able to pop a tire without any... any instruments whatsoever?
Maybe he chewed on it.
Right. Well. The thing is the serial killer that the spirit is, because again, it's not this 10-year-old boy. It's actually the ghost of that mansion. That
what the hell is his name?
It's some Portuguese immigrant named Carlos. Malfeitor,
that's it.
Which means evildoer in Portuguese.
Yeah. You're pretty much doomed as a kid when you get a last name like that. You're like, oh, well, I can't go anywhere but down from this point.
Well, I do have to say that in terms of structure a little bit,
he is a hatchet man, though. That's why he killed all those people.
Right, but Linda has the dream of him attacking her before we know what this guy looks like or what his name actually is, even though Malfader is mentioned earlier. It's just by the psychic, and it's kind of a throwaway. We don't really get it. But I thought that was weird because she has this dream, and all of a sudden she turns around, and there's this guy with a hatchet going, ugh! And I was like, what the fuck is that? What is that? Who is that? Where did that come from? Like,
they
explain it
eventually.
Well, they do, but it's like it's a little ways after it, but I was just confused. Like,
well,
I had to rewind
to
that. But I had to rewind that scene a couple times because I was like, what is that? Like, where'd that come from? Is that like a dream? What? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It just kind of took me out of it a little bit. I think it's better because their only other choice would be to explain it all first, and then you would know who it is, so you'd lose that element of surprise. But I was just kind of like, whoa, what's going on? Like, it kind of pulled me out for a second.
I think at that point in the movie, you're actually, they mean for you to be confused. They mean for you to not understand what Malfader means when the psychic says it. By the way, the psychic was hilarious.
Oh, really?
Little psychic humor.
I really hated her. I was just like, dude, what is this? Your pathetic attempt at trying to create another classic character like the woman from Poltergeist because you failed.
Right. And that was what I was wondering is I want to look at the a Hollywood timeline of psychics in movies. And because clearly when you get Zelda Rubinstein in Poltergeist, that is an unexpected moment that you get this. She's a great character, but just to have this tiny little woman come in and it's the audience laughs, right? It's not what you're expecting.
Even the father says that too. He goes,
"Yeah." So I'm wondering if it was like because then it seems like every psychic after that, people tried to come up with their own. Let's find our own Zelda Rubinstein. Let's find our own quirky,
zany, and everything like that.
Zany psychic, right? They're all some weird, you know, for a while.
I liked it. It was fun.
I think she was supposed to be Valley Girl, but she was doing it very badly.
Yeah.
Because she was like, my nails are grody. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not how a Valley Girl would say that, but whatever.
and the sorting, well,
but they also a Valley Girl wouldn't be dressed like a punk rocker either, right?
You never know, dude. Have you seen that movie Valley Girls? Have you seen that movie Valley Girls?
Yeah,
no, but I've heard the song.
Yeah, if you go watch that movie Valley Girls, there are a couple of them that are dressed like that. I think it was just I wasn't quite sure.
Hairstyle and shaved.
The thing is, when she walked in, I did not think her humor was funny. I found her annoying, and I thought exactly what Mike thought. Oh, this is their try to do a Zelda Rubinstein. Because realistically, this movie was only 4 years after Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. So Poltergeist still would have been fresh in people's minds. And this was also back in the day, we all forget this, when movies ran and stayed in theaters for more than 2 to 3 weeks or a month.
Right.
Sometimes movies were in theaters for like 2 years or a year. You know, it was like, right? I don't know if Poltergeist was one of those, but I would bet you that Poltergeist had a pretty long run.
I'm not saying that you and Mike are wrong. I'm just saying you need to unclench a little bit.
I just don't think it was well done.
Yeah,
I mean, it was
crappy. I honestly just kind of liked having her there because it just, I don't know, it melded well with the cheese of the film itself.
TTFN. What does that mean? Oh, ta-ta for now. I'm like, oh, yo, okay, it's the earliest example of, like, what is that? Internet speak, whatever they call them.
But yeah, basically, I mean, we've seen psychics, you know, somewhat eccentric, like from The Poltergeist to films like The Changeling or whatever. I felt this one was similar to Eric. I could see how a lot of folks felt she was annoying because technically when she walks in and she starts talking, I would be rolling my eyes and going, oh, good Lord. But I think I felt more like Jim, which is at first I was feeling like, ugh. But then as, you show her respect or whatever, and she does her job or whatever. And she's kind of a comic relief character as well.
Well, and I think you're meant to initially think she's a fraud. Yeah. And then find out later that she's not.
Oh, that would make sense. I do have a question jumping a little bit further into the movie. I found it. Do you guys really think that you could break shower glass that easily? Because that kind of struck me as sort of silly.
Maybe it depends on the quality or some shit like that.
Without her getting cut or anything.
Yeah.
Like, I think the breakability of shower glass is somewhere in between witchboard and crawl. I don't think shower glass could contain an alligator, but I think it might take a little more effort than Tawny Katane put forth.
Yeah. Right. I mean, honestly, I understand your point, but I went with it because if she was that frightened and scared, which I probably would have been as well, I could see someone just deciding to smash through
it. She was getting the shit thrown out of her. She might have had the adrenaline pumping.
Grab a towel to protect herself when she broke it?
Yes, she did.
Oh, she did. Okay, I missed that part.
Yeah, and then because she was naked, and then she took that towel after crashing the window with it and put it around her body.
Like our rules, their disappointment.
Well, I think everybody probably that was in 1986 that was 16 years old that was a male.
Yes, in 1986, I was definitely along. I was right there.
Yeah. So, that was the nudity in the film. So you get some little full frontal nudity. But yeah, so I see your point though, Chrissy. But I also, like Eric said, that I went with it because like the adrenaline from the fear, you know. And then Mike made the point too, which was she did protect her hand with the towel. But you're right. I mean, I don't know how strong she would be except for adrenaline. And then also with the towel, would you be able to break it? And would she even break her hand by breaking it too? So you know, but
we also. I can't criticize the film for what is a standard Hollywood trope.
Right.
You know, where, you know, you have, you know, the glass used in the upper floors of windows and office buildings, you know, will break if you throw a tissue at it. You know, it's
Right. Well, and also, you know, I mean, her hand doesn't break when she crashes through the glass, just as when someone gets hit over a head with a whiskey bottle in a film, they're not dead. When in real life, they probably would be dead. So,
see the movie where that happens. Thug! Thud. That's it.
And how the bottle always breaks easily on the corner, and to the point where it has a sharp point as well.
Yeah, well, there's, you know...
Right.
They actually did an episode of Mythbusters where they kind of compared how the damage would be much greater with the liquid inside rather than empty, because a lot of the other movies they would try to in the other movies it would just use the empty glass and it'd be enough to potentially knock someone out, when really when you have a solid wine glass bottle, you're going to bust someone's head open with that fucking
thing. Yeah, one of them orange juice Snapple bottles could kill someone, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, you know, mass times velocity, you know, it's...
Anything can be used as women if you're determined enough.
So if you go with the regular Hollywood, and not just this movie, but any Hollywood film, even A films, where like the whiskey bottle over people's heads and stuff, you just go with it, I guess.
Well, and I really do need to mention one silly thing that just cracked me up to no end. At the end there, after she's possessed by Malfader, she comes after Jim. He shows up in the house. She comes after him because she's possessed. Mm-hmm. And she is dressed up in like a hat and a suit. And I just started laughing because to me, it looked either like bad porn, or it totally reminded me of that video, You Can Leave Your Hat On by Joe Cocker from 9 1/2 Weeks. That is totally what flashed into my head, and all I saw was, oh my God, I just kept hearing, you can leave your hat on, and then I couldn't take that scene seriously. I just laughed
right.
through
well,
the whole
well, that,
end of the movie.
Well, that's the thing, is that he was, if you, we see pictures of Mal Fader in the past and whatnot, he was like this wealthy guy that used to wear like those 1890 leisure suits, which would be like all white with the hat. The last film I had seen something like that was probably Some Like It Hot, you know, all the wealthy people on the hotel farmer's porch, you know, that type of stuff. So it makes sense that he would be wanting to wear that, whether it was of, you know, being, you know, possessing the Linda's character or not. But also, you could look at it too, and I guess, like you said, Chrissy, kind of giggle because it does somewhat
feel
out of,
though.
Yeah, the voice was very cool. I thought that was well done. No, what I was just saying about the suit, Phil, was that I totally understood why they were doing it. I was fine with that. It was just, it, because of the time period and all of that, it was the 80s. Here's this beautiful red mott with this long red hair, and she's like dressed up like something out of a Joe Cocker video. Like, it just wasn't scary, was right. my point. It just looked like, bring on the porn. You know?
I gotta think he must have been really shocked when he goes into this 20-year-old girl's closet and finds that, like, she's got his outfit.
Oh, that
right there.
Outfit, yes.
Yeah, that actually, but I was gonna assume that maybe it was the one suit that Jim owned.
Right. I think you guys aren't giving Linda enough credit. She was very fashion forward. And
yeah,
I think she pulled off the look.
That was a look
in the 80s. That's why I was laughing. It's because all the women were doing that in the 80s. But it's just it was funny.
Maybe that's why he came back now instead of like any other point. It's like, finally, I'm back in style.
Right. But yeah, that is true. That the I mean, Chris, you brought it up at the beginning where you said the hairstyles, the dress, and things of that nature were fairly 1980s. Even Jim, who dressed fairly normal, and also Brandon, who dressed fairly normal, you could argue were still 80s in a sense, because I mean Brandon dressed like you know from the wealthy frat, and Jim was almost to the point where you could see him, had it been 1 year later, he would have been the guy with the jean jacket if it wasn't, you know, sunny California. So it didn't surprise me that a suit like that would have appeared, even if now looking back and you're not familiar with that era, you would say, what the F, you know?
Well, but here's what's really funny. When Jim had his actual shirt on, because he spent a lot of this movie parading around with no shirt.
Yeah.
Because
like you said,
girls in the 80s like to see. So
that's what I was about to say. Like you said, this film was definitely a date night film.
Absolutely.
For sure. So it was definitely trying to bring in as many women as guys too, and that would make sense that, you know, that we would have the Brad Pitt moment on top of the house, you know, type of thing in this type of film too. You know, where the hot guy would be shirtless a lot. So that makes sense. Let's see what else. What did you guys think of the landlady? That was the typical, stereotypical.
She was annoying.
Yeah, she was just kind of there.
Yeah, she was a character. Let's see, what other points? Chris, you brought up, so basically they want to go find David's grave and where he passed away and maybe some of his family. So, you know, basically the 10-year-old boy who drowned, that's supposedly linked to the board. They think
right.
Dave is become evil in a sense because the psychic was possessed by David, and David said, I'm sorry, and all this. But as we find out, that wasn't the case at all. It was Mal Fader the whole time. And then to try to stop what they think is the issue, which is this David ghost, they go for upstate California or wherever, and they find that his parents are dead. They find his grave, and then they go to the dock where he has died, and then they do the seance there, and then this is where they find out that it's actually a Malfighter, because David is linked to that area where he drowned, and he keeps on telling them that, no, it's not me that you were talking to. It was an evil. And then this is where they come up with Malfighter. Brandon gets killed. And then Jimmy heads back to this witch store that's in the town. Because
he's a witch!
That's right. There you go.
Board.
Because they had bought the new board, the new Ouija board from her, and then that's how she searches through the serial killer book that she has and says, yeah, the name Malfighter that you now know from this David ghost was a person that killed like 10 people back in the 1890s before he was caught and killed. And then this is the house that he lives in, and bum, 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 the house is the apartment complex they live in. And this is where everything falls into place, where you figure out that the ghost was the used the board to, I guess, get involved with Linda. Now, what did you guys think of this thing that Brandon kept on saying, which is Linda had to become weak almost like an OCD, where she just had to keep on using the Ouija board, but it wasn't really OCD, it was really her being influenced by Malfighter, and then eventually he could break through and possess her?
Yeah, it was basically the process of breaking her down, so he could... I forgot what the word was, the word for it, but basically it was assimilation. So Malfighter could actually be strong enough, and she would be weak enough, so they could be connected for possession.
Yeah, right, exactly. So what do you guys think of that? Anybody have any comments on any of that? Anything?
Nope.
Not really.
No, although I will say... I will say that I thought it was really amusing that he threw the Ouija board out and at the window, and it lands in the trash perfectly.
That was a pretty good shot, wasn't it?
It was a great shot. And then mysteriously, it's back in the house. Like, I kind of didn't get that. Did she get it back?
She got it. She left the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, she left the hospital and she went to the trash and picked it up.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that part. Yeah, because I will confess I was watching this at work. So I did kind of probably look away a few times and miss a couple things. But anyway.
All right.
That was it. That was all I had on that.
Sure. Let's see, what else? Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? Any scenes that we didn't really discuss? Eric, I know you said you liked the psychic that came in, but she's the one that figures out that it's Malfighter. Like you said, I think it was you that said that she says it in passing. She goes, hey, was this David kid Portuguese, and was his last name Malfighter?
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon says, I have no idea.
Right.
And then she says, all right, well, let me do some research, TTFN.
Oh, God.
And goes inside and starts doing research.
Now that I know how much that bugs Mike, I'm going to have to start signing off with that.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's not just the I hate those people in real life, so.
TTFN.
It's Carol. Well,
in real life, I would probably... side with Mike on that, but as in movie, I felt she was kind of funny.
Loved her kill. I will say her kill was pretty fun.
That was the best kill of the film.
That was the best kill of the film.
It's because all they had to do for the effect was glue a fin to her back.
Yeah.
And then she does this she does this melodramatic death thing, like, that was pretty great. I actually watched that twice. It was so great.
Here's the thing. This movie is entertaining. I was entertained while I was watching this movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I have to
get my joke in. When she died, someone should have said TTFE, ta-ta forever.
Oh.
I hate you, Phil.
That's pretty sensitive, Phil.
Now, the funniest scene ever was where during the final confrontation, Jim, to solve the whole issue, starts unloading the revolver into the fucking Ouija board.
How else are you going to kill a Ouija board, Abe?
Which suddenly jumps up and starts spinning in the air, and he keeps putting bullets in the fucking
head. That was really funny.
But it's cardboard! What else could you do to it?
There's no other possible way you can destroy cardboard other than shooting it.
And I love his fall out the window. It was this really awkward, cheap-ass effect of him falling. I can't expect Dreamweaver to start playing in the background as he's in the car.
Well, in defense of that scene, it was the 80s, and there was no good special effect shot ever of a person falling out a window in the 80s.
That's true.
It all looked like shit.
Yeah, it really did.
Nick Jones from RoboCop.
Right. Yep. The only one that really is good is probably The Omen, when she falls off the balcony.
I wouldn't even call that good. I would just call it better than the others.
All right, I guess you could
call it... They could have thrown a mannequin off the...
Because they always would throw the rag dolls, and it's either a rag doll or a mannequin. So it's a mannequin that's way too stiff, or a rag doll where the limbs are already going in directions they're not
actually. Eric, when Lee Remick dies in The Omen because she hits the car, that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that one was good, right?
I think whoever it was it Abe that said at the beginning when he was falling out the window, and that was just like the cheesiest thing ever.
It was
pretty much was, yeah.
It was like, whoa!
I enjoyed the shot in the movie when Jim realized that the detective was following him. And he looks out the window and sees him in his car, and the detective looks him right in the eye and takes a really intense bite out of his apple.
Yeah.
That made me laugh out loud.
I want a series about that detective.
The cop was pretty cool, though. The cop was pretty cool.
Oh, no, he was terrible. He was terrible at his job.
Let me tell you about another magic trick.
I absolutely love the scene they cut to right after the window scene, where they're trying to fake us out with Jim's apparent death. And there he is with Nick Cass at his wedding, Linda.
Right. That was actually pretty good, because I thought he was dead, too. And then... what we find out is it's just people are crying because of the wedding, and they fast forward, 6 months in the future or something. So
I did like that little fake out. I did think it was clever, but at the same time, I was groaning. I was like, "Oh, this is so awesome, but so groan worthy."
I did think it was clever. I've seen it a million times, but whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, that was the first time I've ever seen a fake out like that. So it was cool for me.
I didn't like any of the characters in this movie, and I was very disappointed that some of them lived.
Hold on, you didn't like Linda?
Nah, not particularly.
Well, you liked Tawny Katane, though, right?
I don't know Tawny Katane.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, you're kind of fan.
I'm just trying to force you to say it.
Boobs!
let me say it. Everybody was kind of a fan of her back in those days.
A fan of her looks, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I used to watch her on that Ordinary People Doing Strange Things or something show. She did that for 4 years.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't either.
She was a co-host.
I guess I wasn't a big Tawny Katane fan.
Right. Well, I mean, it was just a show that I watched, and she happened to be the host.
No, she was on any shows. I thought she just did movies.
Oh, really?
And videos. I know she was in a couple Whitesnake videos.
I maintain that I have a better rack than Tawny Kinteen. Whatever.
But when would this show have been, Phil?
I'll tell you. I got it right here.
She was in Whitesnake videos.
Santa Barbara?
That's right. I thought that's what I remember her from, is the Whitesnake videos.
America's Funniest People. She was on that from 92 to 94. And it was a weekly show. She was a co-host with some guy named Dave Collier.
Are you
but
sure?
We used to watch that show all the time. And
I don't see it on her IMDb page.
Yeah, it's not listed here.
Yeah. She was on it for a good amount of time. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that it's she's not there. I don't know why.
I mean, David Collier, I know him. Because he was on that show and...
Oh, Mike, it's not under her actress credits. It's under herself credits.
Yeah, there you go. Because she plays herself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
92
to 94. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, Phil, you're a bigger Tawny Kinteen fan than I.
Right.
Says very little.
Well, she was really more of a personality rather than... a star, you know, like a non.
I would call her a model.
Yeah, exactly. She did a lot of modeling work, and then just had some film and TV roles on the side, type of stuff.
I'm not trying to be mean to the woman, but I'm pretty sure that if she didn't look as good as she did, her career would have been less.
Right. She was pretty good though, as herself. You know, doing those type of shows though.
I've never seen it, so I can't comment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
a lot of people did that. Like that tennis player did it, Linda Evans, I think, or whatever her name is. I can't remember.
I just remember that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's the one
I used to watch. Yeah, yeah. That's the one with Linda Evans, I think. And she used to.
Oh, that was Kathy Lee Crosby.
Yeah, that's she used to be.
Fran Tarkington and John Davidson. Yeah,
Kathy Lee Crosby. She was like a tennis player, but she was real good looking, and so they had her do that role. And same type of deal with Tawny Kinteen. Yeah,
and the three I remember when I was younger.
Goulis is another one that kind of does that stuff too. What was it, Mike?
I said the three I remember when I was younger, and then I stopped with reality TV. Where it was That's Incredible, Real People, and Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yeah, I used to watch all those.
Ripley's Believe It or Not is coming back, and do you know who the host is going to be?
It's is it Jordan Peele? No, it's nope. Oh, I know this. I know this. I know this. I know this. Bruce Campbell.
Think Chin, yes. Bruce Campbell.
What show?
Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, and Bruce Campbell's going to do it. That's cool.
Yes.
Nice. Well, is it going to be on a regular station? Or?
I have no idea.
Gotcha.
Nowadays, I have no clue.
Gotcha. The last time I remembered Tawny Kinteen was her marriage with Chuck Finley, because I was a huge baseball fan, so... And she was with him for 5 years. Was that?
Is that a baseball player?
Yeah. He has like 200 victories for the California Angels. Yeah, he was pretty damn good. Left-hander, I think. Yeah. But he was oddly never the best pitcher on his team. It just shows you how great those Anaheim are.
Thank you to whoever's snoring, because I'm about to just stay.
Anyway, let's see. All right, so any other items? Anybody?
Anything? I think I'm all set.
I think...
Yeah, there's not a whole lot more to talk about here. Yeah.
Yes, and aside from the... did we mention how the shooting of the Ouija board was possibly one of the worst special effects in film history?
Oh, yes, we did.
It was pretty bad.
It was.
That was really bad. I'm sitting at work, and I just start laughing. And one of my friends comes into the office and says, "Oh, what are you watching?" And I go, "A horror movie." And she goes, "Really?" I'm like, well, it's kind of not like that. Sorry.
How old was the person that asked you?
About 6 years younger than me.
Oh, so they may have, if they were knew anything about horror, they would have known Witchboard, probably.
No, it's interesting. Most of the people that I work with, like my work family, there's only a couple of them that are really into. Like, I have like two or three people that are. Like horror fans, like seriously into horror, but then everybody else, they won't watch horror at all. So they have no idea. So, like, I'll say to them, oh, I'm going to watch Witchboard this week, and they'll go, what? Or I'll go, oh, I'm going to watch, you know. I mean, they really don't know. Like, you say things that you think that even mainstream people who don't watch horror, but maybe they've just seen the ads, they really don't have any idea. Like, you say Annabelle to these people, and they go, what's that? Like, it's really kind of interesting. Yeah, no, it's just interesting because it's an interesting reminder that I think people that are into, like, certain things don't really... Like, we hang together, so we don't realize that there's a whole world out there that has no idea what this shit is.
It's also, it's also a podcasting phenomenon, because just, you know, doing this show and researching stuff for this show, you just learn stuff. And like, there's this one guy I work with. He's one of those people that has to be right about everything. So he'll just start throwing out random statements about movies and what's never been done. I'll be like, oh, well, actually, that's not true. There's this horror movie called blah, 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 where the such and such killed so-and-so with a whatever it was. And he just looks at me like, I hate you.
Yeah, I mean, it's narrow focus, and that, you know, when you are, for lack of a better term, expert in something or really exposed to something, you forget other people don't give a shit. Oh, for example, there used to be a pitcher for the California Angels named Chuck Finley that Eric Webster knows nothing about, but if you were a baseball person, you would know something about. Or, you know, this weekend went to, you know, Scares at Care, Joe Bob Briggs was there, and, you know, everyone there, huge Joe Bob Briggs fans. But you
that's
go,
the thing I'm not in touch with either, is the whole Joe Bob Briggs thing. Apparently there are a lot of people that absolutely love this guy. I totally missed him when I was growing up.
But if you're a horror fan, you at least know of him. But if you're not a horror fan, people don't know who the hell you're talking about.
who is it, actually? Because I don't know either, because I did not grow up connected to horror in any way.
Basically, Joe Bob Briggs is a guy that... kind of does stuff like Elvira type stuff, but he also does reviews of films too. And the thing was, is that he was kind of
reviewing Elvis and show his cleavage.
He was kind of actually his male girl does. But he was kind of regional. So if you didn't have him in your area, you probably wouldn't know who he was. So
he was on cable, and then he went to USA.
Right.
In the early 90s, I'm thinking. But when you go to USA, you know, you have commercials, there's, you know, content has to be edited, so he couldn't quite do it. He's a guy who is big into...
He still did the late night stuff, like, you know, 11 o'clock midnight type stuff.
Right, and he still did, and he was big into a lot of the, you know, the sort of the grindhouse exploitation.
Yeah, he's not just horror, he's grindhouse as well, so all sorts of stuff, yeah.
Right, so this whole thing he did at the convention was a show that he'll do...
Yeah, it was more grindhouse than horror. Actually.
And he's done for the last 10 years, which, as he points out, is, you know, just blatantly violates copyright all over the place. But it was called How Rednecks Saved Hollywood, and it basically kind of goes through all these low-budget exploitation redneck films and child bride films and bootlegger films and all these things. And there's only a handful of them, because he does eventually get to, like, the killer redneck movies, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Hills Have Eyes and, you know, and stuff like that. But he covers all of that, and it's a really good show. It is fun.
I've never watched it, but I believe you, because generally the two reactions I see to Joe Bob Briggs are, oh my God, I love him, or who's that? I've never seen anybody go, oh, man, I hate that guy.
Well, I think a lot of the, my God, I love him, are people probably from our generation, but, like, he was on when I was in college and I didn't get cable, so...
Well, I think everybody's saying that now, like, because even people like Abe's age, who are horror fans that watch his show on Shudder, are probably saying the same thing, which is, oh, my God, that guy's awesome.
Right.
You know?
You can see him on Shudder, and... we'll have a code for that for next week, I think, to let you know, because I don't have it on me.
Yeah, the code is SCARE.
Right. SCARE or SCARES?
That's a good question now.
See?
Oh, No, it's Scares, S-C-A-R-E-S. Okay. And the only reason I know that is because I literally just saw that a few minutes ago.
Okay, so what it is is basically, if you don't have Shudder, you can sign up for it for 1 month free with this code called Scares. And you still have to give your credit card and all that, because if you don't cancel after the month, you know, you become a member, which is only $5. But the reason it's important is that not only do you get a month versus the regular 2 weeks, but it's only for folks who are from Scares That Care convention. And what I mean is, it was announced at Scares That Care convention, and it's supposed to be spread all over by anybody. And the thing is that anybody who uses that, what happens is that Scares That Care is tracking what codes are used when they get their free, people get their free membership.
Shudder is tracking the code.
Yeah, that's correct. Shudder is tracking the code. And so what happens is if Shudder sees that a lot of people are using Scares as the code to get the free month, there's a chance that Scares That Care will get Shudder as a sponsor for their show. And the reason that's important is because Scares That Care, even though all these conventions, a lot of them are really good, you know, whether they're ScareCon, Rockin' Shock, or you know, San Diego Comic Con, or whatever, they're all good, and they're fun, and you know, it's good that you spend your money and watch stuff. The difference is that 100% of all earnings from Scares That Care, after you know the venues paid and the any entertainers are paid and things of that nature, 100% rest goes straight to the charity, and that charity helps three people yearly, which is a child who is sick in their family, a woman that has breast cancer or is a survivor of breast cancer, and a burn victim. And usually it's a three checks of $10,000 each. And so the person that runs the convention, which we should name, is Joe Ripple, who's been director of some B-movies in the past and used to be a police officer.
I think B-movies may be overstating it a bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're probably C-movies, and he'll be the first to tell you that.
That's true. Even though the nude quality is pretty impressive. I've been told. I haven't seen it. I've just seen the documentary and the woman that happened to be in the films that are, yeah. But either way, he runs the convention, and he takes no salary. All the volunteers take no salary, and that includes some semi-famous people like author Brian Keene. And so it's a good cause. So if you are going to get Shudder, why not use Scares code, because you're also helping people who will directly be helped from the convention, because if Shudder does become a sponsor, that's more funds to help these folks. Mike, you want to add any further things, since I've been...
It's a good cause. Again, 100% of the... Well, nobody who works for the charity takes a penny in salary. It is 100% volunteer run. They have to have an office. It is not, you know, some fancy place. It's a little hole in the wall that they need to use. So that's pretty much, you know, their daily overhead. And then, you know, the convention is profitable. They would not run it if it was not. And all of the profit that's left over goes to helping these families in need. And it's a good convention if you happen to be in the, you know, the Virginia area in end of July or early August, depending on the year. You know, it's well worth coming out to do and give it a shot. But it's mostly because of the charity itself, right? So they will sponsor the charity and sponsor the convention if they get that hit. And you get 30 free days of Shudder. So even
if you already have a Shudder account, go create another one and use this code.
And use that code and watch it online, and just so they know that people are using it. I do have another code for another 2 weeks. You know, I'll give that out later, you know, because I have other reasons for that one. But you can hear about, you can watch, you know, there's the full first season of Joe Bob Briggs. He has been renewed for a second season. So if you want to see him review, in, whether it's some classic films like Phantasm or Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or
Henry's Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Henry's Portrait of a Serial Killer. And in the Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, he does mention the Weekend of Fear in Wild West City, New Jersey, that I was at and where I first met him back in October, because he was sitting right next to the director of that film, because that was that director's first horror convention. And then the other things, he's also done recent films, like one of our favorites, Deathgasm. He does an episode on that. There's also original content like, oh, The Ranger, which stars The Ranger. As the Ranger.
Sure.
In which we got two full episodes about. And other things like Terrified. You might be the killer, Mon Monsters. There's a whole bunch of original films you can watch there and Shudder exclusives, as well as classic films. So check it out.
Yeah,
help the charity. Yeah. Help yourself. Help everybody.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. I definitely agree. And you know, you would also be doing a great service to those who really need the help. You also begin support to Shudder because with all these new streaming services, Shudder needs, in order to keep getting these new contents and also all this help for the charity. Shudder needs to be able to keep having additional support to keep going. So just try it out. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because obviously if Shudder can't get money, then they can't sponsor the convention. So it's all a good circle there. It was an excellent point there, Mike. I mean, Herb. So yeah, and we get to meet some really good folks there, like Joe Bob Briggs and Darcy, who do his show. But I want to specifically call out John Anderson. That guy's the best, right, Mike? Isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's the best. He's funny as hell. He loves talking to everybody, I think he's one of those guys that will be brought in every year because the fans love him, and he's the only returning person that did the costume contest judging this year.
Well, I mean, you get the four guests that come almost every year, and it's Sid Haig, Kane Hodder from the Friday the 13th films, Count Gore Duvall, who's a Maryland horror host, who's now an online horror host, and he does the emceeing of the costume competition every year, and I actually got a picture of him this year without his makeup on, which was kind of fun. And now John Anderson seems to be someone who's going to be coming back every year. And John Anderson's done a bunch of different stuff, but he's like a background guy. He's done like it was one of the Ravagers in Guardians of the Galaxy, and so nothing that any he was wearing a T-shirt that said like "I am almost famous" or something like that.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Oh, he could be a stand-up comedian, never mind acting. I mean, this guy's hilarious. But Mike...
And the first guest I think I've ever met who's nerdier than I am, so...
But in a good way, he's cool. He's cool. He's not like a nerd as in like a dork nerd, right? I mean, and I'm not saying you are, Mike, either, but I mean, he's...
I am.
He just knows his stuff. He's really...
I know you didn't mean that, Phil. We all know I'm totally a dork nerd, so...
but he knows his genre stuff almost as good as Joe Bob Briggs, it seems. Now, Mike, when you got the picture of the count, was this like Sunday night when he had taken off all his makeup?
It was Sunday morning.
Okay.
I think he was just going down to get breakfast. So.
Okay.
And I saw him, like took me a second to recognize him because he's just, you know, this old white guy in a blue polo shirt.
Sunday morning breakfast is where you get to meet people.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, there you go. And I changed my shirt. It's not as many times as before because I like these shirts a lot, so I just kept them on most of the time. So, but I changed them maybe five a day, five or six a day.
That's still too much.
Yeah, my last shirt. My last shirt I did wear for 6 hours though. I didn't change that one. I like that one.
Wow, that's a new record for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
What I need to know is how does anybody wear a shirt for like 6 hours without smelling? because I need to change my shirt every 25 minutes. So
well, at conventions, I usually do that. I'll tell you one thing. A lot of people like my shirts, though. A lot of people came up to me and go, oh, dude, I love your shirt. So I picked out good
ones. I think it's a really good idea because we honestly, I know it's kind of like a pain in the butt to change the shirts all the time, but the reality is we all have too many T-shirts. And I have so many great T-shirts that I love, and I just don't get the opportunity to wear them all. So at least by changing them every few hours, you get to wear more than you normally would have, you know?
Yeah, so, that's the point. Yeah. And I'm also helping out independent artists, because every shirt I wear is independent artist artwork that has just been put on shirts. So it's not like I'm wearing movie shirts or anything like that. I'm just wearing horror and sci-fi shirts that are by artists, so kind of cool.
Well, to get back to Witchboard, I know Philip already saw it, but Eric and I did go and post that link on the Facebook group.
I saw that. Thank you
for the article. So it's.
And I also tagged Michelle Barkley in it.
Yeah, I saw that you did that, so she can read it too. Yeah, it's really the best article I've read in years. I mean, when I can sit down and actually learn something about a subject that I pretty much am competent in, having a good base of knowledge in. And when I can sit down and learn like a bunch of crap I have never learned before, then I'm like, wow, this is great. Like, it was really good article. So.
One of our listeners, Amy Schuss-Rain, also tagged somebody and said that her friend Kimberly Pope can tell you a lot about Witchboards too. So hopefully we'll get a nice conversation going to talk about Ouija boards and those type of things.
Yeah, I'm very fascinated with the history of it, and particularly the cultural history of it. And less, I mean, Nathan's more into kind of the occult aspect of it. I find it kind of an interesting connection to history and the people from our past, just because of the way that everybody and groups of people related to it so differently. So for me, that's the fascinating part.
Now, we do have an email that we'll read next week, but Amy, who I just mentioned, she sent us another email, and we'll have that on our next week's episode. But before we give into our final thoughts on Witchboard, and thank you, Michelle Barkley, for the choice. Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan, and he may make an appearance on the Dark Discussions podcast.
He may. I do a general interest podcast with Dan called the Askansty Podcast. That's spelled Askansity. You can find it anywhere you find this podcast. We talk about stuff, and things get a little weird sometimes.
Excellent. And yes, he's going to make his debut on Dark Discussions on a special episode that me, Eric, Chrissy, and Dan will be talking about. Mike will be out of town that week, and Abe has chosen that he wouldn't have the time to see the film, most likely. So the four of us are going to go and talk about it. So it'll probably be next week's episode, actually. So it's exciting to finally be able to talk to Dan, if not in person, at least on Skype.
Right.
Let's see what else. And Dan's a great guy. Dan's a great guy.
We'll see if he gets invited back.
Indeed. let's see. So, Chrissy, how was your signing at the Caverns, by the way? Because you do things.
Because I do things. I write short dark fiction, and you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com. I recently had a book signing up at Howe Caverns in upstate New York for my newest collection, The Shadows Behind. You can order through my website, through me, contact me directly if you'd like a signed copy. We are doing a giveaway with Dark Discussions, which we haven't really put together yet. I will say that if you are out there and you have read this book and liked it, please give me a review on Amazon. I need some review help, and I'm not the type that likes to ask. But if you are out there and you did read this book and you did like it, please do that. I would really be appreciative. Even if you didn't like it and you said this one story sucked, just please go put a review out there that says that. I'm totally cool with that. So anyway, that's what I do. And like I said, you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonScootover.com.
All right, excellent. And me, Mike, and Eric will be talking about a film on the cinema a la carte coming up. And then probably in October or late September, me and Abe will be doing a book episode with a couple of our listeners, Kevin Letts and Barrett Heisner, and anybody else on Dark Discussions who wants to join us. And so that's coming out soon enough, too. So with all that stated, let's go around and give our final thoughts. So, Abe, why don't you give your final thoughts on Witchboard?
It's 80s fun. It's 80s cheese. It's really a nice little film that if you just want to have a good laugh and have some fun with. It's not scary. It's not exactly very gory. And it might not exactly stand out when compared to the other films released during that era, or even past films, or even films nowadays. But it's still worth a watch. It's got a lot of melodrama, and it's got some really hokey storytelling, but as I said, it's mostly just for fun, and honestly, it was really fun talking about it tonight. And while I may not give it a golden recommendation, I still say it's worth a watch.
All right, very good, Eric.
This is not a great movie, but it's an entertaining movie, and if you enjoy 80s cheese horror, check it out.
All right, very good. For me, the nostalgia is huge with it. Seeing Tawny Katane again and all the funny hairstyles and clothing and such so forth is kind of fun. Tawny Katane has that cool possession voice, which is awesome. But all in all, it's a pretty good time capsule horror film from the 80s that isn't a slasher film. It's directed by a very popular cult director, Mr. Tenney. So, you know, he has a pretty good fan base for the second tier directors of yesteryear. So if you're a fan of Night of the Demon, you should probably definitely check this out. I would highly recommend the Scream Factory copy of the disc because of all the extras, and now you can get it for around $20 or less.
I ordered my copy while we were doing this.
Oh, excellent. Very good. Yeah. So Eric can give us his own personal review of the commentaries and all that other good stuff after he watches it. So I'll look forward to mention that to you later, Eric, in the year to see your opinion. And so I would give it a thumbs up and definitely worth checking out. Let's see. We got Mike.
Yes, you got Mike. It's a fun film. I apologize. I spaced out for a second. Yeah, look, it's a fun movie. It's an 80s film. A lot of people are horror fans that love 80s films. A lot of 80s films, horror films, were fun, and this is a fun horror film. It's not very horrific. This is the kind of film that makes me wonder, what the fuck were all those parent groups complaining about with horror movies in the 80s? Because I don't see it. Check it out if you're a fan of the subgenre or that era. It's definitely it's one of the more 80s horror films. Definitely give it a shot.
All right, crazy.
I've got to echo everything everybody else said. This movie is just fun 80s cheese. It is highly entertaining. I've never been so kind of sucked into a horror movie recently as I was into this. I just really had a blast. I did see one note that I wrote down that I forgot to mention, and I scribbled on a piece of paper. This movie might actually really be about the male ego. I do think, which, you know, whatever, it was just my initial thoughts. I do think that this movie is kind of a soap opera with supernatural elements. So if you like 80s cheese and you're going into this, but you're like the type who might want to get a little bit of a scare here and there, it's not going to happen. Just go and enjoy this for what this is. So I'm a yes on this one. Go see it or rent it or whatever.
All right, very good. All right, so once again, Witchboard.
Sorry, just to throw this out there, I believe it is, I was able to watch it on Amazon Prime.
Oh, and it is free on Vudu with commercials, yep. But there is... if you go on YouTube, yeah, it's free on YouTube with no commercials, and it's actually a pretty decent transfer, at least right now. So it's free, and it's totally watchable on YouTube.
All right, so this is 1986, written and directed by Kevin Tenney, starring 80s star Tawny Kitaen. Has fairly decent reviews based off of the number of reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and is generally loved as a nostalgic film for horror fans that grew up and love 80s horror. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Witchboard. Come back next week. We'll have another topic. TTFN.